Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. But that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when we bring them the best tech Valentine's, no, Mother's Day presents. Dang it. I flubbed
it. A couple months late on that one.
A little late on that one, but I am still your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
And honestly, I think that might have been the first time that I flubbed an intro since, like, at least 2 years ago.
I have definitely messed it up, and I feel like I've messed it up and I wasn't even trying to do, because like you have the pressure of saying the unique thing every week, and I just say the same thing every week, and I feel like I've still messed up my simple part more than you have.
You know what's crazy is I've also never, well, in the initial couple of episodes, we tried to plan out what the special thing was, but for the past 3 years, I've always just come up with them on the spot, like as the sentence is coming out of my mouth. And honestly, it's a very niche skill, but it's one that I will toot my own horn on that, because I've done that about 120 times just off the cuff.
That's, you know, it's almost like it's your job to talk off the cuff about things.
Look, you know, you're not wrong. Also, this is a very a funny thing to point out here. Someone in chat just said, the podcast is 3 years old. Time flies. Well, what if I were to tell you it's 4 years old?
Yeah, it was 2021. Like,
yep.
Winter, February. Spring. February, yeah. Wait, wasn't it Valentine's Day?
Yes.
Wasn't it the first
episode? I think it literally was.
Yeah.
Wait, okay, let me go check this now. That's crazy. First of all, we totally missed the opportunity to like say something about that.
Yeah.
Completely failed at that. But I think you're right. Also funny is that we're on episode 134 of our weekly show, more than 4 years in. The math on that is not great for us.
Well, you know, we try.
We sure do. Let's see here. Episode 1 of Dark Mode. Wow. February 14th, 2021.
Wow. So, okay, we got to do something for 5. So the next Valentine's Day, 5 years. That's the, if we're
half
still doing this,
if we're still friends alive.
Yeah, if we're even alive.
You know, I mean, I agree with you. You know what's crazy, though, is I'm looking back now at all of the old streams from before I started doing YouTube, before we started doing, like, the podcast and all that stuff. And, man, COVID was a crazy time. There's a stream here, live MacBook Pro restoration and upgrades, that I did an hour and 45 minutes just fixing a MacBook in October of 2020. That live stream has 624,000 views.
Damn, that's pretty good.
Most of those came after the fact, but I do remember, let's see, will it show what the most amount of concurrent viewers was during that stream? I don't know. Oh, yeah. There was 3,500 chat messages. Will it show me how many live viewers there were, though? I don't think it will. But I remember it being like 3,000 or 4,000. Oh, here it is. Yeah, 2,500 live concurrent viewers, because nobody had anything else to do.
Yeah, those initial months of COVID were, I mean, they were crazy for a lot of reasons, but they were definitely, I remember you were like telling me about that, like how the views were through the roof and like everything was, because like, yeah, people had nothing to do.
Yeah, that was a weird time. That was, oh, dude, COVID was such a weird time to do content, because it was, I got views on anything that I uploaded. I had some absolute stinker of videos because I couldn't, you know, you couldn't do very much. So like the video concepts weren't great, but it literally anything was getting views back then. But paradoxically, I was making like less than half of my income because from that week in March when they announced the lockdowns, immediately, boom, all the sponsors that I had pulled out. I went from like, you know, a couple sponsors a month to absolutely nothing and didn't have another sponsor. That was mid-March. Didn't have another sponsor until, I think, October. And then the AdSense rates absolutely tanked. And how I miss pre-COVID AdSense. Dude, the amount of stuff that I could be doing content-wise with 2019 AdSense rates, this is not something that's talked about very much, but back in late 2019, if you got 1 million views a month, at least doing tech, I don't know if other, you know, other niches were even higher than this, but doing tech videos in 2019, if I got 1 million views in a month, that equated to roughly $12,000 in AdSense revenue. So that was good money. And that meant that you could make videos, especially if you got a lot of views, you could make videos without running ads in them. Well, running the mid-roll ads, but without a sponsor. And you could actually make really good income that way. Now, if I get 1 million views in a month, which I do most months, it's about $5,000 to $6,000. So it's literally half of what it used to be. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, some part of it, COVID changed a lot of things. Part of it could be, I mean, I don't know. YouTube, I feel like, is a very saturated platform. Not that it wasn't. I mean, it was to an extent in 2019, but I almost wonder if COVID sort of, you know, with all the people that were sitting at home with nothing to do, I'm sure some of those people tried making content and, like, I don't know, maybe there are more YouTubers that came up in the past few years, like, through COVID in that way. So, like, I don't, whatever it is, that is, yeah, I mean, that's rough that it's like, if you're making half as much, because like materially, you're not doing anything different. If anything, you're doing like better, like, you know, the videos that you're making are better and higher quality than they were in 2019. But to have that much of a cut and, you know, you have to rely on sponsors and, you know, other ways of making money like that, you know, it's kind of rough.
Yeah. And it's hard to kind of pinpoint exactly why that happened. E uploads here in chat, sort of hypothesizing, did TikTok or YouTube Shorts ruin it? I think that's probably a part of it. Certainly the ad rates dropping initially was COVID, 100%. It was an overnight thing. Like, I watched my RPM drop expeditiously. You know, it was very clearly because of that. They recovered a little bit at the end of 2020 and early 2021, and then seemingly they have actually been declining for the past couple of years. Like, it's gotten to the point where, like, YouTube AdSense used to be a sizable portion of my revenue, but a mixture of getting better advertising rates and worse YouTube AdSense rates means that now I will make in a month off of YouTube AdSense less than what I'll typically make from a sponsor, a single video sponsor. Like,
wow.
I mean, last month it was $2,500. And that's down from, like, this is a very transparent moment, but I will tell you guys because we're on the topic. But the best month that I ever had on YouTube AdSense was, I think, was it the end of 2019? Or no, you know what? It was actually 2021. It was when the Apple Silicon MacBook Pros came out, which was obviously a very significant month in terms of content for me. That was like, you know, that's like holy grail for my channel effectively. And yeah, that was where, because ad rates at that point were still about 60-75% of what they were pre-COVID, but still higher than they are now. And that month, I mean, it was a lot of views, obviously. That month I made $36,000 on AdSense. And that was, damn, that was an unreal. Obviously, I've not even gotten close to that outside of that month. But that, I don't think that you could do that. With that same amount of views now, it would probably be about 16 for the same views, which is pretty significantly worse.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm trying to like draw a parallel. There was a thing in tech, like during COVID, obviously there was a lot of like caution and there was a lot of, you know, sort of like we didn't know the full extent of it. We didn't know, you know, when are we going to get the vaccines? When are things going to go back to normal? Like there was a lot of caution and like worry about it. After things started opening up again and we had the vaccines and things were returning to normal, there was, at least in tech, like they hired a ton of people. There was like a big market boom, like post COVID. I guess people were getting back out. They were spending more money. Like they were going to like all these in-person, you know, whatever, movies and concerts and events and like things that they couldn't do for a while. So there was like a big economic boom. The tech industry hired a ton of people. And whenever it was, maybe it was like around 21 or 22, it must have been around 22. I think the tech companies kind of realized that they had overhired. I think because what happened was that the market, there was like a big boom post-COVID and it kind of maybe didn't go as far as they thought, or maybe they weren't really thinking that much, but like whatever, they had overhired. And that's where all those layoffs, you know, if you've heard about layoffs for the past, especially like 22 to 24 were the big times, and they're still happening now, but especially then, that was basically. And so I'm almost wondering, because like when you said, you know, when the Apple Silicon Max came out, that was like right around, like that would have been around that sort of post-COVID, maybe it was a little bit later, but like kind of that post-COVID boom. And then, you know, things kind of took a step back. And it almost, I wonder if there's a parallel or if it's a coincidence. I feel like there has to be some sort of relation between the two.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think you're right that there was a correlation there. And I think a lot of it was because during that pre-COVID time, or post-COVID time, I should say, everybody was upgrading their tech. Because during COVID, you know, everybody, it kind of shifted a lot of the way that we work and the way that we live, for better or for worse. You know, a lot of remote work, which people like, but I definitely think that it glued a lot more people to their screens and their homes. And, you know, there was definitely a difference in social balance, which was very good in the short term for the tech companies. And honestly, that was a pretty much perfect time for Apple to release a new generation of MacBooks, right? That late 2021, that was well-timed, because there were a lot of people saying, hey, I'm using my laptop a lot more than I thought that I was going to, and I'm willing to spend the money to get a good one that's going to last. And I think since then, a lot of, maybe this goes hand in hand with that hiring boom and then all the layoffs, which is, as tech felt like it was sort of, I guess it was kind of an artificial boost, right? COVID spurred up a lot of spending. A lot of people upgrading their phones, upgrading their laptops and their iPads, buying a whole bunch of new stuff because they were stuck inside. They had disposable income. They're like, what else am I going to do? But that's not because the tech was necessarily better and more interesting in all cases. And since that COVID period, as you know, I think a lot of these companies operate on a quarterly basis, right? They want to show year over year, quarter over quarter, that they're doing better, higher profits, better margins, what have you. And when you have this big, big boom for COVID and get a lot of sales, kind of hard to top that. You know, you're kind of going to go down. And I think that's why we've seen this proliferation in what feels like, I guess how we would describe it is kind of squeezing the consumer, right? what's the minimum number of features that we can do? How can we increase the price a little bit? Shrinkflation, like really trying to get the most out of everything. And I think that is why you see people saying, is tech in general not interesting anymore? Like, I think that there's a very, very clear relation between all of these events that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing, especially, you know, if we want to talk about Apple, since ostensibly this is an Apple podcast, like you were talking about the MacBook Pros that came out at the end of 2021 and saying like that was very fortuitous, like it was good timing for all these people upgrading. And mm-hmm. and then I feel like we've seen, first of all, let's say, you know, a lot of people upgraded. Maybe that was almost, we've talked about like super cycles in the past. We've said like, you know, oh, Apple's going to do these. That was a super cycle, first of all. Like going to Apple mm-hmm. Silicon, that's a huge difference. New design, new architecture, like that was a super cycle. But even more so, given the timing, I'm sure more people upgraded than perhaps otherwise would have, you know, given that timing. Plus, we've talked a lot on this show about how Macs are lasting longer than ever now, thanks to Apple mm-hmm. Silicon. So that creates this thing where we're here, you know, what are we, like 4 years or, yeah, 4 years.
Closer right? to four than three now.
Yeah, so closer to 3.5, 4 years, yeah, that's right, since those Macs came out. And, you know, I've said before, I can't justify upgrading. I'm sure a lot of people can't. So it's that thing where, like, there was this, for more reasons than one, there was a big super cycle in at the end of 2021 for the MacBook Pros and for all the Macs, really, when, you know, each Mac got its Apple Silicon refresh. And now we're here a few years later where not that much has happened. Is you know, to that question of is tech still interesting or not? I mean, is Apple still interesting? They haven't done too much that's like super interesting in the past few years, Vision Pro and whatever. But like other, like since Apple Silicon, there hasn't been a ton that's been super interesting. Plus these devices are so good and they last for so long and so many people bought them that, you know, there's just not as many people, I guess, that are looking to get a new one. And then it creates sort of that scenario you're talking about where like you see the shrinkflation and stuff because these companies are really trying to get money, and if they're not going to get it from you buying a new product, they have to get it, you know, some other way.
I think what you're describing there is effectively it's Tim Cook's weakness. Okay, we've talked a lot about Steve Jobs versus Tim Cook. Like there's pros and cons to both of them, and what I'll say is I think Tim Cook is a superb businessman. He knows how to run a supply chain. He knows exactly how to increase reliability, streamline production. He's great at that. But I think what we're seeing now, as we're in the 2020s, is that his vision is not where Steve Jobs was. They're sort of, I kind of think that in an ideal world, I would have Tim Cook and Steve Jobs be CEO together. I would have them, they're sort of a yin and yang, right? Steve Jobs could take this wild, out of the blue concept that wasn't even a product that was on the market per se, but he could read the tea leaves of like what technologies are out there, how can we combine them, how can we do this properly to make it best for the user. And then Tim Cook could say, how can we make this high quality, well produced? How can we fit this into a broader strategy? You know, they really just had that dynamic that is so effective. But when you put Tim Cook out on his own, where I think he lacks is in that creative vision. And Final Cut or Vision Pro, not Final Cut Pro, Apple Vision Pro is the poster child for that difference. Because if you go back from when Tim Cook took over at the very end of 2011, you look at a lot of the major products that came out pretty much up until COVID, a lot of those had foundations in the Steve Jobs era. You know, the iPhone 5, that was a Steve Jobs design. The Apple Watch was started under Steve Jobs. the iPad obviously was a continuation of Steve's vision. And so now when we get to Vision Pro, this is the first time that we have an entire product segment under Tim Cook's leadership. And to our point here, some people in chat, I forgot Vision Pro existed, not even available in their country. So I don't know what it is specifically, but Tim Cook doesn't have the sauce.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you compare, you know, it's interesting. I don't know. When you compare like the Vision Pro to something that like Steve Jobs, let's say the iPhone, something that Steve Jobs was like, that was like really, you know, that was like the Steve Jobs thing. We all remember him going up and announcing it. And that was like a revolutionary thing, the iPhone. And Vision Pro was probably supposed to be a revolutionary kind of thing as well. It was supposed to sort of redefine or like bring Apple into the, you know, the extended reality, mixed reality age, and arguably it didn't really do that. But if you compare them, the one thing that I will say is that like the iPhone was a lot simpler than the Vision Pro is. And not just because the Vision Pro is like a crazy glasses, you know, like with your seeing your view and like projecting 3D windows into it. But I just mean more like the iPhone didn't have an app store when it first launched. So it was literally just the handful of built-in apps that Apple had. Vision Pro, you can't launch Vision Pro without an app store. And, you know, in the 2020s, whatever year it came out, 2024, right? 2024, mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't launch it without an app store. So it had to have an app store. So that means that there had to be hundreds of people working on all of the SDKs for the developers to use, that's making true. Vision Pro work with all of these different third-party apps. Whereas the iPhone, they didn't have to think about any of that. They just said, these are the dozen apps that are going to run on the thing, and we'll have a web browser, and you can, you know, you can build your own websites. But that's like a standard technology that already exists, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of things like that. Now, of course, the iPhone was a long time ago. And so when I'm saying it was simpler, it was still very complicated at the time because, you know, things like multi-touch were not standard, whereas now something like multi-touch would be standard. So it was a different time, but it was also a bit simpler in some of those ways. So that's sort of a comparison to make. But I think at the end of the day, the iPhone was like a Steve Jobs thing because it was like, you look at all of the phones that exist today, or sorry, all of the phones that existed at the time, and it really was something different. It was, you know, get rid of the keyboard, get rid of the stylus, you just interact with it with your finger. That was huge. And Vision Pro, I feel like, kind of tried to do that. They have, you know, the pinch gesture and the moving stuff. And to be fair, that they do kind of have it because all the other, you know, XR headsets have controllers and Vision Pro doesn't have it. But I just feel like at the end of the day, there's something missing that, like, even as primitive as the iPhone was, I still feel like there was something about it that the Vision Pro just doesn't have that, like, I don't know, maybe that like made you kind of see the future or see the vision that like I don't see with Vision Pro. I'm not sure what it is, but there's definitely something there.
You're right. You're exactly right. And I think I'm sort of like, here's what I think, okay? The difference between something like the iPhone and something like Vision Pro is the ingredients are all there, but the recipe is different. And I really think it's the recipe, not the ingredients, that are the problem with Vision Pro. Because the thing that people don't really get about Steve Jobs is very rarely was he literally pulling a technology out of thin air. That was just not how it worked. At no point in Apple's history did they just pluck a technology that did not exist out of thin air and make it exist. I talked about this in a recent video about how Apple invented the modern laptop. And in its base components, none of the technologies that it relied on were something that it designed from scratch. But it was the recipe, the way that they implemented everything. And that's what made it really good. So for that video, the example that I gave was the palm rest. They figured, okay, we have a trackball, we have a keyboard, those exist, but let's make the keyboard further up the machine so you can rest your wrists. Brilliant idea. No new technology, just a good idea. The trackpad. The PowerBook 500 series was the first laptop to feature a trackpad. The trackpad was not invented by Apple. And in fact, the people who did invent trackpad at Cirque had been going all to all of the different tech companies pitching this technology, saying, look at this, you could just touch it and it's great, it's more precise, and nobody wanted it. And then they met with Apple and they put it in a laptop, and now every laptop and even desktops too have trackpads. Same thing happened with Wi-Fi. Apple didn't invent Wi-Fi, but they put it in the iBook. They didn't invent widescreen, but they put it on the PowerBook. And the same thing was true with the iPhone. They didn't invent cell phones. They didn't invent touch screens. They didn't invent any of the core technologies that make the iPhone possible. What they did was combine everything in the right way and then make it really user-friendly and have a clear pitch. Vision Pro doesn't do that, because it has the same ingredients, right? The displays, the ability to detect gestures, the real-time processing for cameras. It has all of the high tech, but it doesn't... It's the sauce. It's that special way of combining them that they just don't have. And I think a part of that is the price point, the fact that you have to wear it, and it doesn't go in your pocket. And as a subsidiary of those, you're never going to see one, because it you do it at your house. It doesn't have that same attraction, the way that pretty much every other Apple product has spread, be it laptop, iPhone, Apple Watch, AirPods. You see them around. There's a social aspect to it of like, oh, you've got the new iPhone? That's sick. Let me try it. Oh, it looks really nice. Oh, is that the new Apple Watch? That is a product that didn't exist before, but now I can see it. And as someone who doesn't know what it is, I can look at that and go, wow, I want one. When is that going to happen with Vision Pro? Every time I've had a friend try Vision Pro, there's like a 15-minute setup and tutorial process. I have to explain how to use it. I have to usually have them AirPlay to the app, to my TV, so that I can see what they're seeing and tell them how to use it. You're not going to gain users with that level of training just to use the product. That was like the whole pitch for Apple as a company. The whole reason that they existed was to make technology not something that was only for nerds. The graphical user interface, the mouse, all of that. And Vision Pro doesn't have it.
It's a good point. And I think, I guess going to the last thing that you said about it not being super intuitive, or that you have to explain. And that was also my experience, because for the week and a half or however long that I had Vision Pro, I obviously showed it to a bunch of people, and I always had them, I always had it like air playing to my phone or something so I could see what they were seeing, and I would tell them what to do with it. I think part of that might be the fact that this is a very new sort of frontier field, or whatever you want to call it. Like not a lot of people have experience with XR or VR kind of stuff. And even if they do, Apple's implementation is still different. The fact that you pinch your fingers together, I don't think anything else has that, or at least it's not like a standard thing that you would find on other headsets. So to an extent, it could be, you know, Apple being early to the game. Apple is early to the game, you know, in not all the time, but in sometimes they are, like we've talked about with, you know, USB-C on the Macs, or I don't know. We've talked about other times where Apple has been like removing the CD drive. We've talked about these examples. So maybe it's Apple being a bit early to the game. That's fair. I do agree that it's not the most intuitive. And I think the social aspect that you're talking about is also kind of interesting that like, yeah, you're not going to see people using it. But I still feel like there's something very fundamental that like, I mean, the first iPhone that I had was the iPhone 4. But I remember some of my friends we could go on and on about the 4, but like I remember some of my friends had, it was either the 3GS or the 3G, I don't remember, but like even, I don't know about the first iPhone because I obviously didn't have one at the time and I haven't like, obviously if you tried to use one now, it would be a very different frame of mind than like using it in 2007, you know, when it came out. But like
true.
My impression at least is that the iPhone early on, Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3 even, was a much better experience than Vision Pro. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe the first iPhone was like really slow and the battery was terrible and it was very buggy, like whatever. I'm honestly not sure. But like, I don't know. I just feel like with the Vision Pro, the people that made it didn't like, I don't want to say they didn't test it, but like, come on, you put the thing on for 10 minutes and it's already like hot and sweaty and uncomfortable. And regardless of how good the thing is, that's already like, you know, a non-starter. Not to mention that it's, you know, it's good and it's impressive for what it is. But like, even if you could ignore that, there's not a ton that you can do with it. And in, you know, 2024, 2025, we expect a lot more than we did in, you know, 2007 when the iPhone came out. So I think it's partially sort of the expectations and the, you know, modern times versus, you know, I don't want to say it wasn't modern, but like, you know, back in the early days of, you know, the iPhone. But there are some differences. I just feel like I don't know how much of it is attributed to Vision Pro not being as good as the iPhone, or we're expecting a lot more now than we were at the time. I'm not sure like what
a bit of both,
you know, percentage it is. I think it's both.
I think what's interesting is that, so you mentioned the user experience of the iPhone when it launched in 2007. And part of it, there frankly were not very many features on that phone. Like, you know, there wasn't that much to be buggy because it didn't do very much. But what it did do, it did well. You know, smartphones at the time weren't that smart, frankly. So being able to browse the web on a phone was already a really big deal. But where I think that it falls apart now is kind of what you said about, I don't know if the Vision Pro engineers tested it or what, right? And I think that what's happening nowadays is when, how do I put this? In Steve Jobs' era, if they had a user error or a user interface bug that didn't work right, it didn't feel right, he would have said, we're not shipping this, throw it away, start over, cost be damned. But the impression that I get with Vision Pro is they ran into some of these limitations, and instead of saying, well, let's just keep working and keep going, spend more money, work on it until it is perfect, they said, well, okay, we kind of have to just ship it. It's not going to be worth, you know, our margin isn't going to be right. We're not going to be able to make enough units if we make it, you know, lighter or make the cameras better or whatever it is. And the reality is, like, in Steve Jobs' day, he absolutely released unfinished products. But the user experience was always the top priority. You know, even if there was crippling reliability issues, that he was okay with. But if the user experience was sacrificed in any way, that product would not be released. So again, we get these trade-offs, right? Steve Jobs released a lot of stinkers, a lot of products that were very, very, very flawed. And under Tim Cook, it is pretty much undeniable that the products are more reliable. They last longer. They don't have as many issues. Somebody here mentioned AntennaGate. Yeah, we haven't had something like that in the last almost like 10 years, I want to say. The iPhone has not had these huge widespread bugs and issues. Same with the Mac. We used to have so many graphics issues. But we've kind of traded that for products that work perfectly functional, but don't feel right.
No, I agree. I agree with you. And that's part of the thing, you know, when we talk about, oh, is Apple kind of boring now? You know, whether that's true or not, it's kind of the point that, like, you know, we've said before, the early days of the iPhone, there were big changes, right? We've said, like, look at the 3GS versus the 4 versus the 5 versus the 6. Those are some big changes. And so, like, when we had AntennaGate on the iPhone 4, that was because it was a brand new design. It was brand new materials. There was a lot of difference. And they found, you know, that whole thing was if you, like, grip your phone on the bottom because they had the antenna bands, like, going on the side, you could, like, sort of block them. And I guess that wasn't an issue on the 3GS because the antenna bands were probably in a different place. I know it was, like, plastic on the back, so that might have helped let the signal through, whatever it was. The point is that the 4 was a very different phone and very different design, and that was something that they didn't see coming. Whereas if you talk about now, where you say, yeah, the iPhones for the past while have been, you know, pretty solid, but, like, if you compare the iPhone 16 to the iPhone 10, yeah, it's different, but it's even the iPhone 16 to the iPhone 10, okay, versus the 3GS to the 4, I think the 3GS to the 4 is at least as big, if not bigger, of a difference than the 10 to the 16. Or if you don't like the 10 to the 16, you can say the 12 to the 16, whatever, however you prefer. But, like, my point is that things have slowed down a bit. And I know we've talked about, yeah, it's sort of inevitable. The iPhone's a very mature platform now. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, things have become a lot more stable. But they because the design has also become more stable in the fact that it's not changing as much.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is definitely, again, another trade-off. And it's funny also that you mentioned stability, because the other thing that I wanted to touch on today is the stability of the software.
Oh, we lost Luke there. I hope that wasn't a macOS stability bug.
Wow. Speaking of stability, how about that?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. My goodness. Yeah, that it just force reloaded the page there for me. That's fun. Literally right on cue. And last week we had the issue with the Photos UB. The Photos opening, and it was all pink, and, like, that was a whole bug. It's pretty bad. I actually just literally 5 minutes before we started, just finished filming my video on the bugginess that we're seeing. And one of the things that I think is underpinning all of this, from Ohi Mark here in chat, tech has just become so smoothed out at this point. The tech is great. It's hard to make these big jumps when tech is already so great and so pervasive. And that, I think, that is true in so many ways. And it's a big reason why iPhones all look the same now. Why nobody seems to want to upgrade their MacBook, because they're already so fast. iPads as well. And it's also why we're getting more bugs, because the analogy that I use in this video is software operating systems are like sedimentary rock. It's, you know, every year you're adding another layer on top of a layer. It's not like at any point Apple just goes in, wipes the slate clean, and rebuilds the operating system. Deep in there, if you really dive into the code of iOS 19, you will at some point find some piece of code that was on the iPhone 2G when it launched in 2007. That's just how software works. And so when you get this experience where it's like, okay, every year we got to keep adding all these features, otherwise people won't care. but the features are already, you know, the core features are there. So we have to start getting really out there. And then all of a sudden this bloat really starts to increase, where now you've got, you know, widgets and interactive and new buttons and the dynamic island and different applications and APIs and layer and layer and layer and layer. And it's just a lot of stuff happening. So, I mean, obviously I'm not the programmer here. I'm sure you could speak more to this, but like, it's kind of inevitable that you're going to get some cracks showing.
No, that's absolutely true. I think one of the fun things about, or interesting things about, like, when you're writing Swift code or Objective-C code and you're looking at like the Apple frameworks, it'll tell you exactly when a certain class or framework or whatever was like added to iOS, which obviously makes sense, right? If you're targeting old versions of iOS, you have to, like, if you're trying to use some class, you have to make sure it's available in all the versions of the app that you're running, or you have to, you know, do some workaround or whatever. But to your point, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of the core like functionality, like the core things that you would do, have been around since the very beginning. I was just looking at, like, you know, UI device is the class that represents like your phone, basically. It's like an iOS framework, but like that's been around since the very first version of iOS, and that's like a very common thing. Use UI device to like get information about the user's device and, you know, set certain parameters and things, and that's been around since the very beginning. So to your point, there is a lot of stuff, and now obviously, okay, some things over the years get deprecated and, you know, a new implementation comes up. So like there were old ways of doing things, and, you know, Apple says kind of, we're not going to do it this way anymore, here's the new way of doing it. Even things that already existed and still exist can change to, you know, work with new features and whatever. But like, to your point, it is very much like a sedimentary rock. And I think also it's interesting because we're talking about how, like, you know, the hardware hasn't changed as much lately. The hardware is, you know, very good. It's very mature. I think software is sort of the place, like, you look at the early days of the iPhone, the software, the operating system was changing a lot, right? The original iPhone OS was missing a lot of stuff. It took, you know, it didn't have copy and paste initially. Well, okay, it didn't even have an app store initially, but like even after we got the app store, it still took some time to get copy and paste or multitasking. There were like
wallpaper on your home screen.
That, great point. There were all of these very basic things that were missing for a long time. And so there definitely were big leaps in software, but there were also big leaps in hardware. And I feel like now we're at the point where it's hard to make those big leaps in hardware because, you know, the hardware is already very good. And I feel like it's sort of very well defined. You know, you can make the corners rounded or you know, more squared off, and you can change that every few years. You can try to shrink the bezels, you can shrink the camera bump, you can add more cameras. There's like these things that you can do, but it's not going to be super fundamental. The software is really where you can do a lot more in theory, right? You can redesign the operating system, you can add new features, you can make your devices work together in new ways. There's like, I feel like there's a lot more, you know, now AI is the big thing. So all the companies are adding AI stuff. Like, I feel like that's really what's been happening, is that the hardware has been solid. So the companies are trying to do more with the software to differentiate things. And then when you have all of this new code coming, and it's also going on top of this very old code that's been existing for a long time, there's more opportunities for, you know, cracks to form and issues to come up. And also things have gotten more complicated in general, right? The original iPhone was much simpler. It was at an earlier time where it was harder to make that simpler thing, but it was still much simpler. Even literally there was one iPhone, there was one screen size. So you could literally hard code and you could say, I want this button to be at this pixel position, because there's only one screen size and that's all you had to worry about. These days, there's all different kinds of form factors. People can change the font size on their phone. They can do all different accessibility things. There's lots of different screen sizes, and there will be future new screen sizes that you don't even know about yet. So there's more complexity of making all of that work. So it's just, it's the progression of time, and it's also the fact that you know, we have the hardware so good that the software is, you know, there's more pressure to change it for the sake of changing it.
That's true. It's a lot easier to change that than to invent a new technology. But I don't know. It's tough here because I'm looking through the chat. I was looking up some little fun facts there, and what's really interesting, let me see if I can find the comment. Someone said basically that the Apple needs to literally just take a year and just the sole focus is stability. And we talked about that last week with macOS, OS 10, Snow Leopard. And its entire reason for being was, we will fix the bugs. We're going to just make this rock solid. And honestly, I thought that's what iOS 18 was going to be. And then I kind of started to think that that's what iOS 19 was going to be, because we're now about a month out from getting our look at iOS 19. However, the problem is, it's now looking like iOS 19 is going to be a pretty big visual overhaul. And look, I'm not mad about that. I'm always here for a nice redesign. I love when big changes happen. But I do kind of worry about making a major overhaul like that on top of what we all here agree is a pretty shaky foundation at this point. I mean, dude, so last week on the show, I put out the call to have you guys send in screenshots and screen recordings of bugs that you've experienced. And I got about 70 emails. Some of them people didn't have photos and videos. They just had descriptions of bugs and stuff that I've noticed as well. It was weird kind of seeing. I was like, oh, I've had that happen before. Oh, I've seen that bug before. And to get in 1 week 70 people that just happened to on hand have these clips, screenshots, recordings of the bugs, that's crazy. Because I mean, I experienced quite a lot of bugs, but I don't have that many videos of them, because most of the time when it happens, it's like in the middle of the day when you're trying to do something, like you're not going to get it on camera or a screenshot of it or whatever. So the fact that I was able to get that many people to send that in really speaks to how buggy and unstable the experience is right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot. I'm literally staring at a nice bug right now on my,
God.
Screen. I'll send this screenshot to you. Okay. So it's the photos widget that you know, it just like picks a featured photo or memory or whatever to show you. And so I have all of my electronic devices in Spanish, but I temporarily put my phone in Chinese just to try it out because I'm learning Chinese. And so the screenshot that I sent you is the title of a photo's memory that is in Spanish, except the name of the place is written in Chinese. I never had my computer in Chinese before, and it certainly wasn't in Chinese when I took this picture, because this was a year ago. This is before I was... No, this was 2 years ago. This was way before I was learning Chinese.
Yeah.
But there's the screenshot.
2 years ago yesterday.
Yeah, so there's the this was when I went to Google I/O. But the Spanish part, it's like in the seats at, and then that Chinese says like Shoreline Amphitheater. That's the location.
Oh my God.
But the location is written in Chinese, and the sort of description is written in Spanish, and the whole thing should be in Spanish. Like, to be clear, it's not like it should be in English, but like, the fact that they're mixing, and I still have that issue. I changed my phone, whatever. It's like, I don't know.
Also,
it's
I was
going to
say, because if your phone was, my first thought was, well, maybe the location just saves based on whatever language your phone was in at the time. But you did not have your phone in Chinese, you were not learning that 2 years ago. So no. Your phone was definitely in Spanish and English only at that time. So where is it? Like, what is the logic? How does that even happen?
I actually think the reason is because I set my languages. You know, you like pick your device language and you can actually pick multiple languages. I think I have it set to like Spanish and then Spanish and then Chinese and then English in that order. I think that's what it's set as. And so maybe the place name was translated in Chinese, but it wasn't translated in Spanish. Mm. And the fact that Chinese is number two and English is number three, it shows the Chinese. Maybe there's actually a reason for it. I don't know. But it's still just like I've seen like very weird things involving like the languages and like when it chooses to pick one language or another. But regardless of whether that's actually a bug or if it's just a confusing thing, to get back to your earlier point, I think like a big visual overhaul isn't necessarily what we need right now. Like, I'm not mm-hmm. saying that it's a bad thing necessarily, because I'm open to a change. If it's going to look nicer or more modern, that's fine. I don't think iOS looks bad right now that we desperately need a change, but I feel like if this visual overhaul, if they can do it in a way where they can like sort of clean up the bugs at the same time, you know what I mean? Like if you're doing this visual overhaul and they do it right and they say, okay, we're going to look at each app, we're going to see what it looks like in the new design, we're going to tweak it to look nice, we're going to clean up all of the weird interactions and visual inconsistencies and stuff, and we're really going to polish everything, and the visual overhaul is sort of an excuse for them to do all of that, like, that could be a good thing. But if they just do it as, okay, we're going to swap out the rendering code to, like, have this new visual design, and we're going to ship it because it looks different, and then people will buy it, and shareholders will be happy, that's not the way to do it, and it certainly won't make things better. It honestly might make things worse than they already are.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. And that's kind of what I've been trying to suss out. You know what I mean? Like, to what level is this newest update just sort of slap a Band-Aid on it and just say, hey, it looks different now. Switch out the icons. Make the interface windows look a little different. But I think if they did what you just described, which would be comprehensively go through the entire thing with a fine-tooth comb and polish and tweak, right? That is what we need. And I think you're right that we could do both. We could do a design change while also focusing on stability. I'm not sure that's the direction that they will have gone, though. And that's what really irks me, because I can tell, I know, I see so many comments when I posted that on my channel. Let me see if I can even open that up and look through some of the comments, because there's 160 comments on that post, which is a lot more than I normally get. And people really, really are not happy. It's crazy. Let me pull this up here. When the keyboard clicks, randomly get loud AF. It's been a thing since iOS 5. Do you know that one? I know that one. You know what? When
yeah,
like
I know that.
You're typing and they all stack up and it goes click, click, click.
Yep.
That one's a fun one. Look, this one. All caps. Thank you. I would like Apple to buckle down and clean out iOS from top to bottom and fix all the issues. Something like what they did with iOS 12. Exactly. Other people saying they need to stop with the annual updates. It puts artificial constraint and forces them to push stuff out the door that isn't ready. I absolutely have gotten that sense. A lot of the stuff they haven't even made out the door. They just announced features that we still don't have a year later. It's crazy. And, I mean, look at this. I'm so pleased to read this. I keep finding myself having to force quit my phone when an app crashes and hangs. Oh, dude, that's another one. I cannot AirDrop from my Mac Pro to my iPhone anymore. It doesn't work. Straight up.
Really?
I've tried restarting it, updating, restart both, Wi-Fi on and off. I've tried everything. It will not AirDrop anymore.
That's crazy. And I feel like you use AirDrop a lot to like send footage and stuff. That seems really annoying.
It is. It's really, really frustrating. I really don't know what to say other than AirDrop has been around for 10 years. It's a decade. How have we not figured that out, guys?
Yeah, it's, I really do think it's just Apple. Look, Apple has a lot of resources. Really, they have a lot of money. They could get more resources. But I think they're taking the resources that they have, as in like the engineers' time and the, you know, product managers and all of their, like, that time, and they're putting it towards the new features, because the new features are flashy and, you know, that's what's going to, they're big things that they can announce and get people to upgrade and whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, the bug fixing is always going to take sort of a backseat to that, because it's the hard work that no one really wants to do, that you can't really announce. Like, you can announce, it's like, you know, this is the most stable version of iOS, and people will be happy about that, don't get me wrong, but it's not flashy like a new feature is. So I get why it's not the priority, but like, Apple, like, it needs to improve. You know, it's already kind of a mess, and if you keep stacking even more stuff on top of it, it's gonna get even worse. And I just feel like Apple has the resources to hire people, even if they took all the people that are currently there and had them work on new features, and they just got more people to come in and fix the bugs, or, you know, split somehow, whatever. I think Apple has enough money and resources that they could make that happen, and they really do need to make that happen based on all these comments that we're seeing here.
Yeah, no, it's I've never seen a response that is this universal. You know, like, I feel like in most of the time when I make a video with a criticism, whether it's, you know, hey, the new iPhone X, Y, and Z, don't love about it, whatever it may be, there's always pushback. You know, there's always people that are like, yes, good video, I agree, but I don't think it's that bad, yada, yada, yada. This has been one of the most universal, almost everyone seems to agree that the bugginess is a problem. I didn't have not a single comment in that post saying, I actually think that it's fine. I actually think that you're wrong and there's no issues. That's crazy. Do you know how hard it is to get tech bros to agree on stuff? Whew.
No, that's true. And I also wonder, because, like, this is the kind of thing that is going to affect this typical user, right? The typical user, I wonder if maybe the typical user, standard user, is more accepting of these things, that, like, if one of these bugs happens, like, I don't know. If you're just a regular sort of non-super technical person and you run into a bug, I think if it's sort of a one-off thing and you have to kill the app or restart your phone or whatever, maybe they won't think as much. If it's something that, like, stops them, like, you were showing that example where you couldn't, like, look at pictures because it would just be like a solid color or whatever. Like, if there's a regular non-tech person who can't do that, and they're not going to know, they're going to have no idea why that's happening. They're going to probably think that their phone is broken. They're not going to have any, like, alternative, like, things to try. They're not going to think about, like, oh, trying to export the picture and, like, send it to another device or whatever. They're not going to do all that. I feel like that's a much worse. I almost feel like tech people are more, potentially more forgiving of bugs. At the very least, like, when I see a bug, I'll try to work around it, and maybe I'll have some idea. Like, I'll try to sort of find the root cause and figure out and, like, know how to avoid it or know why it's happening. This typical user is not going to do all that work. They're just going to say, oh, it's broken and whatever. And I feel like that's even worse. And Apple wants to appeal to these, like, they want to appeal to the tech people, but, like, really they want to appeal to the non-tech people. And so I feel like the bugs are even worse in that case, that like it really is a problem that Apple needs to fix, not just for the tech people that are complaining, but for the non-tech people that may not complain about it, but they're going to experience it and they're not going to know what to do. And, you know, it's just going to, you know, completely mess them up.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's, dude, I don't know. I really don't know. I'm hoping. I think we're definitely in an interesting time where we have, how long is it until Dub Dub? Is it June 9th?
It's like a little, just under a month.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited, cautiously excited. There's a couple of things that I'm looking forward to, although I guess maybe we want to save our big Dub Dub expectations for a little bit later. But I'm definitely excited to see how Apple handles Apple Intelligence. Mm.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they're going to say, because a lot of the stuff that they announced last year still isn't available and realistically won't be available for a while. Maybe, I mean, theoretically, like,
if at all
this year, but like maybe not even in, maybe even next Dub Dub, there will still be stuff that'll be 2 years old at that point for all we know. So I am also curious to see, are they going to announce any new features that are actually going to ship? Are they going to re-announce features that they already announced last year? Are they going to try to emphasize it less? I don't think they're going to emphasize it less, because AI is still kind of the big thing right now. So I'm also very curious.
True. We'll see. I'll tell you what, though. We won't see next week. I'm going to be back home in Philadelphia next Sunday. So I will be back on the 25th. Will you?
I think I will be in New Jersey for a wedding, so that's probably not going to work.
Can I interest you in June 1st?
I think I will be in... June 1st. I will have to get back to you on that one.
Oh, okay.
But
okay,
if not June 1st, then the 8th, which is the day before Dub Dub. So we will have at least one more show before Dub Dub, so we can talk about all the stuff that we're going to expect before the big show.
Yeah, well, look, that's fine. We'll have plenty of time to build up expectations, and boy, will we have a lot to talk about. But for now, I have been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. Have a great night, and we'll see you next time.